Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Today,
one of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
On the Grave Talks, we take a personal live ghost tour of Mackinac Island. I have always been drawn to the ghosts of Mackinac Island. I don't know why. It is, to put it lightly, a one-of-a-kind place. No matter how many times one visits Mackinac Island, they usually walk away with a desire to see more. While it's theorized that tens of thousands may call it their final resting place, you'll find that just under 500 living souls call the island home on a yearly basis. Yes, the dead truly do outnumber the living on Mackinac Island, even during the busy summer tourist season. A season which may be the favorite time of year for the dead to come out and remind the living of their presence on this hollowed piece of ground poking out of Lake Huron. Over the summer of 2019, I was able to get a first-hand look at some of the ghosts of Mackinac Island and haunted locations with my tour guide, author, and resident paranormal historian of Mackinac Island, Todd Clements. Today's episode is going to feel a little bit different than other episodes of the program because it was recorded live as we walked around the island. The background noises and music that you hear are the sounds, the very unique sounds of Mackinac Island. From horses trotting to people talking to noises coming out of cafes. This is a walk around the island that has intrigued me my entire life. We begin this episode standing just outside of the Bicycle Street Inn in downtown Mackinac Island.
When they actually built the new hotel, the building that's here, when they put the basement into it, they found a lot of sets of human remains. Most of them were Native American. There were a few European. They can kind of tell by the way they were buried. The Native Americans, they're buried kind of hunched down, so their head is the highest point where we traditionally bury someone. They're on their back.
Sure.
So they took they didn't know who they were. They had no idea, especially the European ones. There was a cemetery, I'll walk you guys by it, that used to be up the street, and they moved it, but they didn't move all of them. So they think rain, time might have moved them a little bit underneath the area we're at. And the Native Americans are buried all over the island, everywhere. Not scary, but it's just, this was sacred land. It was kind of like their Garden of Eden. And what happened was, this was where man was created, the creation myths of the Native Americans. And what they would do is they'd take their chiefs, their medicine men, the most important people in all the tribe, and they'd bring them here and they'd bury them on the island. And it's kind of similar to like Hollywood, where the famous person does it and everybody's like, oh, I'll try that. Well, like Native Americans, the most famous people were the medicine men, the chiefs, the families. So they all started burying their people here. So it wound up being giant burial ground. So, and it's sacred ground for them. And eventually it became European settlement in the 1600s. It was the first, I think it was 1671. Nicolette was the first person to come to the island. He was a missionary. Then Marquette, who's the famous one that towns and colleges and everything are named after, he came here and started a mission and was converting Native Americans over to Christianity from their native religions. So, and there's a ton of stories about that. So.
And once you bury that many people on an island, or in any place for that matter, over time, you're not going to know, especially if you're not marking the graves. They're everywhere.
They are everywhere, and they still are found to this day. Mm-hmm. There was a time we were hiking along a bluff. We were actually looking for an old cave that supposedly still had remnants and char marks and things from when the Native Americans used it. We couldn't get to the cave because it was like 40 feet up a bluff and come down. Well, you've seen the bluffs on the island. They're quite high. We weren't going to climb down. We tried ropes. We couldn't actually throw the rope over the bluff in the right place. So we just gave up. So we're coming down this loose rock, and I see this weird colored rock. I go grab it. I look at it, and it was actually a bone. It was a human vertebrae, we found out later. But it was 600 to 800 years old, they estimated, based on color, decomposition, and everything like that. So you can find them everywhere. They found walrus bones on the island from the Ice Age. So
what do they do now when, like, say somebody's building a cottage on a piece of land, and they start excavating, and they inevitably find some remains. They don't know who it is. They don't know exactly where it's from. What do they do with those remains today?
Typically, it does happen. It's not as often. There's not a ton of new construction. Mm-hmm. In some of the areas of new construction, they're actually getting through the rock, so okay. It's not burial areas. But when they do find them, typically, Native American, they have a burial mound out in St. Anne's Cemetery for Native Americans. If you go up there, you see it's roped off, and they will put them in that burial mound. But first they will contact the tribes up in Sault Ste. Marie and say, would you like us to hold these for you to put them in your own active burial grounds? Sometimes they'll get them, sometimes they don't, but they're offered the opportunity. So
it's not like Funny Farm where it's like, oh, hey,
yeah.
that's good.
But in long time ago, in the 1800s, when they would find them, they just threw them away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just the way it was back then. I'll take you through Marquette Park and show you where they found over 1,000 sets of Native American remains when they were putting in a farm.
Wow.
Yep, they were tilling up the land, and they were just bone after bone, skulls, bones, 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 piles of bones. They had their farm. The fort always complained that the food was like salted pork, salted fish, salted this, salted that. They didn't have much for vegetables. They didn't have much for anything. And the soldiers saw this huge plot of land right there in front. It's perfect for a farm. So they decided we want more food, variety in our food. So they planted it, and that's what happened when they did it.
Did things grow well?
They grew okay. I mean, there's not a long growing season up here, but they could get corn, and I think they did like rhubarb and beets, just nothing great.
I'm just wondering with like what's in the soil.
Oh, yeah, if that's rich soil.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of
exactly.
in the soil. So
well, lead the way. Which way
right,
you want to
we'll
go?
We'll go this
okay.
way. There's an interesting story in there. It's actually a friend of my brother was staying in the hotel on the third floor. I just don't know which room it was.
And this is in the what's now Goodfellas.
Lakeview Hotel. And he was there with his wife. They went to bed, turned off all the lights. Bathroom light popped on. Okay, old hotel. This is like, I want to say mid-1800s it was built as a mm-hmm. hotel. I think it was 1852, but don't quote me on it. No, I'm not sure the exact year on that one. But he's staying in the hotel. The light goes on in the bathroom. He gets out of bed, turns it off. It woke both of them up. They go back to sleep. Light turned back on. He goes back in there, shuts it off again. He's like, I hope it doesn't happen again. Goes back in. They go to bed. Light comes on again, except this time there's a vanity in the room with a mirror. There's a woman sitting in front of the vanity facing the mirror. They couldn't see her face, but there was a woman sitting there. Then the light turned itself off. They turn the light on next to the bed. The woman was gone, but the mirror now had a crack clean across it. So, and he's the type of person who doesn't believe in any of the ghost stories, doesn't believe in anything, but he's like, there's that one time.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I can't explain it. We didn't do it. And the mirror was broken. The light kept turning on and turned off. And so that happened on the third floor here.
Is there any backstory to this building that would lead into that? Or
the only backstory we really have is it's a roughly 170-year-old hotel. And people came and went. It was here when the fort was active. Mm-hmm. And soldiers would have their families come in. We just don't know who it was, mm-hmm. but it's a woman. And some people have said they've seen soldiers in the hallway, too, a couple times. Okay. And we don't know who they are.
Sure.
Unfortunately, most ghosts don't introduce themselves. Yeah, sure. We try and do the history behind it, but we never know who they are. We do know one. This is the one I'm going to talk about right over here.
Okay.
We're about 95 to almost, can never be 100%, about 95% sure on this one. Right here, Village Inn, authentic Jamaican food. It is really good. Just started this year. I'd never had authentic. I've had, like, knockoff. Yeah, they even have Jamaican desserts. There's this one thing called Festival, which is kind of like a churro. And if you ask for ice cream if they can, it's pretty good. So okay. I don't know, guys, you already had dessert, but well, another time.
And I should note, when we're recording this, we're not adding Jamaican music just for effect.
No,
it's literally playing in the background.
Playing in the background, yep. So this is Village Inn. You have the AT&T, like, processing center where all the lines for the cable and the phones go to, and then you have some apartments up there. From this alley to this next street was originally St. Anne's Church, was standing right here, and then it was traditional at the time, cemetery was right next to the church. So the cemetery went from that building all the way up, and then they decided that the church was having financial trouble, and one of the island locals, she was a fur trader who was running a successful business back in the early 1800s, and I'll tell you a little bit about when we get to her house.
Okay.
But she rescued the church and saved them by moving the church to her property, and it still stands there today. When she saved the church and they moved it, what they did was they took the land the church used to sit, filled it in with more graves, and then the graveyard sat there for a very, very, very long time. They decided they were going to move it because tourism was starting to come into town, and they moved it to a center place in the island where it would be quiet. So they moved all the graves, but if you've ever seen the movie Poltergeist, some of them, they moved the headstones. They didn't move the bodies. So like I was saying, the hotel right there, the big beige, that's the hotel that has the basement. This is where they would have been buried. It's not very far away. With rain, especially how much we've had this year up here, the things move through the dirt. And we think that's how they moved down into where the basement was when they dug it up. Four people we know are documented to have not been moved, but there may have been more than that. And when they moved it to the center of the island, there's a couple photos that are around. Weeds were growing. Most people were buried there. It was overcrowded. No one knew was being buried there for a very long time. The families kind of left or moved away or just forgot. They were forgotten. A lot of the graves were forgotten. It wasn't well maintained. So that's why they moved. Part of the reason they moved the cemetery. And then they just... Here we have Village Inn. And we have the AT&T. And we have apartments. Some of the activity here, I think, is related to a residual haunt. It's not an active haunt, and it actually follows a pathway. We had to put it together to figure out what it was, and it was just a puzzle. We heard, okay, the haunted theater, which is the amusement one, the haunted theater has haunts, and is a woman. It's all we knew, Victorian woman in the haunted theater, and she was usually seen in the back of the haunted theater. So we had that story. We're like, okay. Then we had a story, there's a breezeway, which I can take you guys because we're not on a tour. It's like a little field where saddle horses will graze. Mm-hmm. And people have said they've seen a woman walk through there in Victorian clothes. And in the back of the Village Inn, there is the women's restroom. Doors open on the stalls. The door to the bathroom is open at times. They hear noises of a woman coughing or making noise or doing something. And one woman was actually coming out of the bathroom, and there's a woman in Victorian clothes standing at the door, And she walked by her, and then she looked back to look at her dress, because elaborate Victorian dress, you don't see them that often up here. She was gone. She vanished, simply vanished. Now, other people have seen a woman in Victorian dress coming out near the front corner of this restaurant, coming out to the street, coming down the street, turning here, and she vanishes not far in off this road, off the sidewalk. So we're like, okay, how are we going to figure this out? Who could this be? What was here? The first thing I was like, what's significant about this spot? We found out there was a house here, a boarding house here called the Lozens House. It was run by the Lapine family for a very long time, and they had a daughter. Now, how we got a time frame, people staying in Lakeview right here would report occasionally a woman humming a song, but they no one really understood what the song was. It was an older song, and I couldn't hum it. I know it, but I don't know how to do it and make it sound right. So they'd hear her humming it. She's usually wearing a long dress, Victorian dress. She has a sash. She has a parasol. And she comes from there, goes over here, and she vanishes. Well, this is where her front door was, to her house. So the residual haunt, they do what they know. Mm-hmm. And when she goes through the door, she's gone. She never changes. She always does the same thing. People catch bits and pieces of it depending on the barometric pressure, the weather, temperature. All these things can factor into what happens.
Yeah.
So when she disappears, oh, the person in here, one of them emailed me just, it was sometime around Christmas, and he was one of the people who saw it, got my email address, and he goes, I've got the song. Watch A Christmas Story, the movie A Christmas Story with Ralphie. When he gets soap poisoning and does the song, sad song, that's the song she was humming. So I go and look on, find out the movie, what's the song? Okay, I got the song. Hearts and Flowers, that's the name of the song. So I'm like, okay, Hearts and Flowers. What's the significance of that song? It was a silent movie accompanying it. They play it at silent movies. The Haunted Theater used to be a silent movie house.
Okay.
And we looked, and there was a movie made called Hearts and Flowers, and it was 1918, and the song went with that movie, and we knew that this house in 1918 had a significant story. Catherine Lapine, she got engaged and got married. And it's a strange love affair, because the guy she fell in love with, he was already married, and they were madly in love. He was here for work, and they decided he was going to leave his wife and marry her. He married her, and just 3 days, 6 days after he got his divorce, they got married, and they lived happily ever after. They moved to Hancock, Michigan, up in the UP, lived their full lives, and they were happy. They had kids. He died in the 70s. She died in the 1980s. And end of the story. But her ghost is the residual haunt. We think it was the night she got engaged to the guy she fell in love with. They went and saw a movie, had a romantic night. She's walking home. She walks through the old cemetery that used to be here at the time. And she's coming through, comes down the street, humming the song from the movie she just saw, and then goes home. So we think that's Catherine Lapine who haunts it. But it's just the puzzle pieces on that one just fit. You don't usually get that many stories from different locations. Everybody thinks it's something different, but it's actually the same thing going in one direction.
For it all to come together.
It came all together, and I'm just like, so we know who she is. She's a happy haunt, but she's residual, but she's happy.
Sure.
So it was pretty cool when we got that one and put it all together. Yeah. That was interesting. This is Mativier.
Okay.
Mativier Inn is consistently considered one of the best bed and breakfasts in the United States.
Okay.
Service is phenomenal. Food's phenomenal. Rooms are phenomenal. It's a great place. At one time, the namesake, Mary Mativier, it was in her family for a long time, and they used to take in as a boarding house some sorts for people coming to the island. Kind of before bed and breakfast, boarding houses were kind of the same thing. And she passed away a long time ago. But she may still be moving around inside the house. Guests have said that they'll be in the room if they're watching TV or something, and then they notice there's a woman in the room, looks like you and me. She is as real as can be, and she asks. Their clothes aren't very old. I mean, they're probably 1930s. They're dated, but they could be accepted as something someone might wear today. And she says, do you need any towels? Are your linens fresh enough for you? Types of thing. She's just making sure you're having a good stay. And they're like, oh, everything's great. It's great. It's great. She turns around, goes to the door. She doesn't open the door. She goes straight through the door when she leaves. I've talked to about 5 people who've seen her. She doesn't always say anything. Sometimes she just moves through the room. But there's a couple times people have asked. They've told me that she's asked if everything's all right. Are you having a nice stay? Because she was known to be very attentive to all the guests in the hotel or in the bed and breakfast. One person did say that once they saw her looking out over the horizon from that gated area on the roof, she was just a woman standing up there looking out, and then she vanished while she was standing on the roof. She was gone.
I suppose if you love what you do, you know. And that's your passion, it'd be hard to leave it.
And there used to be a giraffe over here, but I think they got rid of it. Not a real one.
Not a real
one. It's fake. It was in the bushes to make people who were walking by go, what's that? It's a
just giraffe. Actually a native species to Mackinac Island. No one knew
that. I did see an otter like 2 days ago.
Sure.
And I knew they could get large, but we usually see the female otters on the island with her babies. Mm-hmm. And they're the cutest thing. We might get to see them tonight because this is about the time they're running around.
Mm-hmm.
Adorable. That's all I can say. And but the male was just, we'll go in the area he was at. He was, and I'm not lying,
oh wow,
that long. He was huge. He actually scared us because he was so big. At first we were like, what is that? Oh, and I mean, it's not on the way he's running and everything like that. He's probably 4.5 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never seen an otter on the island.
That sounds huge. We were just talking earlier. I said, you know, does it happen in winter when the ice is solid that a lot of animals get over here and then it melts and then in their own animal way, they're like, oh, shit, we're stuck.
We had a bear. One year we had a bear come on the island. It's kind of a sad story, but it has a sweet ending, I guess. Bear got on the island. People knew there was a bear on the island, so they had, you can't have a bear on the island with tourism. It was a black bear, and some people went and found her, trapped her, and they put her down. What they didn't know is she had a cub. And the cub was rescued. They saved him. They fed him. They basically took him in. One guy took him in as a pet and domesticated the bear to the best that you can domesticate a bear. And he got nicknamed Cubby. There's even books in the bookstore about the bear. It's like kids' books called Cubby the Bear. In one of the buildings down here, they had a room one time. It was like all the photos of Cubby and everything like that. And you could come pet Cubby and feed Cubby. And,
wow.
But sometimes some things come over the ice.
Yeah.
We have white-tailed deer. We have otters. We have mink. We had beavers, but no one's seen them for a while. Last year, we had a whole family of beavers, but nobody knows where they went.
Okay.
That was interesting because the island actually hasn't had beavers since the fur trade.
Oh, wow.
So it was a big deal because they basically got wiped out for the fur trade.
Sure.
What else do we have? There's a coyote every now and then, but no one's reported a coyote this year. Lots of birds. We have bald eagles. We have loons. We have, we have all of Michigan animals.
Sure.
Seem to be here except the dangerous ones, which is the way I like
That's
it.
That's nice, yeah.
You know, the dangerous ones.
Yeah.
The house behind us is actually another story. It's kind of a sad story, but if you look at that top window on the left, that is where we tend to see Mary Biddle. This story's got a lot. I mean, there's a lot of tie-ins to the Biddle family. The house is the oldest original location standing house on the island. It was built, we believe, in the 1780s. So it is a house that would have been possibly standing during the Revolutionary War. And that's where it was. The Biddle family bought it in, we believe, early 1800s, around 1815, 1820. We don't know who the original owner was. But Edward Biddle was a fur trader. He had his family here. His wife was half Native American, half French. They call it Matisse. There's a lot of that on this island, especially at that time. She was supposed to be a gorgeous woman. They raised their kids here, and Mary Biddle was 8 or 9 years old. I believe she was 9 years old. She went out over there, just down the street, onto the straits when it was frozen and it was covered with ice. The ice broke. She went through the ice, but they rescued her. They got her out, got her home, but she had developed pneumonia from going into the ice-cold water. She got sick. She didn't make it. She We believe she died in the house because they did do a lot of medical things from the house because the Biddles were known for their charity. They do medical, help bring the doctor in and do medical procedure. They'd feed people who were hungry. They'd house people who had nowhere to stay. They were a very generous family. And speaking of generosity, if you ever heard of the movie Happiest Millionaire, Disney, it's a Disney movie they did a long time ago. It wasn't a huge hit. It was one of the original Walt Disney movies, but it was based on the Biddle family, not this family, their relatives. The Happiest Millionaire, because they were an ecstatically happy family, I guess, and they were millionaires. So, but that was their family. That was that the basis of the movie. And Mary, we believe she did pass in the house, and we have actually had her seen on our tours about 12 times last year. We do a lot of tours, but about 12 times people saw a little girl staring out of that one window. There's photos, but no one sent them to us yet. And we always tell people, please, please, please send us the photo. Email it right now. Oh, I don't have a good signal on my phone, which the island is notorious for bad phone signals. We haven't seen one yet, but there's two photos of her standing in the window out there somewhere.
Wow.
We'd love to see them. And the original story we told here was of her sister before we started seeing her in the window. Is Sophia Biddle. And Sophia Biddle was her older sister, and she was, I would say, in her 20s at the time. She met a soldier officer at the fort. John Pemberton was his name. He was only here for about a year, but they had definitely had interest, and they kind of fell in love. But he was a soldier, so he got shipped out, and he wound up back in his home in Philadelphia. And her parents wanted her to have a proper education, so they sent her to a really good school in Philadelphia. What do you think happened in Philadelphia? The two found each other. They fell madly in love, and he proposed to her to get married, and she accepted, and they were going to get married. And then his family found out that her mother was half Native American at the time. That wasn't really that acceptable. And he was from a very wealthy family, and they said, if you marry her, you're no longer part of this family. We're going to disown you, that kind of thing. And he broke off the engagement, broke her heart, and she came back home after that happened. She was not happy with her mom, because her mom's the reason that she couldn't marry the man she loved. So they had a lot of tension between the two of them. And Madeleine LaFambois, who we'll talk about later, who also saved St. Anne's Church, she was half Native American as well, and she actually helped the two of them repair their relationship, and they had a normal mother-daughter relationship for a short time before she developed tuberculosis and she died. Some say she developed tuberculosis because she had a broken heart and it made her sick. I mean, at the time, there's a lot of different kinds of medicine. Tuberculosis was a thing, but it was kind of not a huge thing at that time, but it happened, called consumption at the time. So when she died, it was July 9th, and they buried her up in the cemetery. And as everyone left the grave, a man came up to the grave and laid a single red rose on her grave, and it was John Pemberton. So the ghost story to that is in St. Anne's Cemetery, where she's buried, that on the anniversary of her death, a man comes in, puts a red rose on her grave, and then disappears. Now, yes, people have put red roses on her grave. We don't know if it's because of the ghost story. We don't know if it's actually a ghostly red rose. We don't know. But sometimes it's plastic, and I don't think plastic red roses are from ghosts.
So only real.
It's become a tradition that people will put a red rose on her grave. But there's the rumor that his ghost will be the one who lays the red rose on her grave on the anniversary of her death. So, and if you're lucky, when it's open, they cook all, like, the meals for a lot of people in the historic houses in here, right there. They work on them all day. It's so hot in that kitchen, too. They do them over open fire, just like they would have back then. And if you're lucky and you ask nice enough, they'll let you try some of the food. And it's traditional food from, like, the early 1800s, and it is actually pretty good. It's really good food. Stews and all kinds of different things. They actually make fabric in there, which they make into clothing for the reenactors. They do it with the yarn, the spinning, everything. They do it right in here. It's a really cool place if you like history, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they do the real thing of what would happen in that house.
Yeah.
almost 200 years ago now.
That's interesting.
So they're still able to use it for that.
Yep, yeah. They still use it for that.
Do you think that helps with keeping Mary there?
Yes, I think that makes her happy. Because it's like, it's not her family, but it's people doing what her family would have done. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably makes her happy. She's just probably looking out the window to see what's going on out in the street. And why do they keep talking about my family out there? I hear my dad's name. I hear my mom's name. I hear my sister's name all the time. So we could be why. That is our blacksmith shop right there. They're almost open. They started working today. They built all these gates. A lot of the wrought iron things you see that are blacksmithed on the island are made here. Okay. The older ones were the original blacksmith shop, which is down there. And if you go in the lake out there, you go deep enough and you go underwater, you will find thousands of horseshoes because the old blacksmith used to shoe the horses there. And you take the worn shoes and just throw them in the lake. So that's an interesting tidbit. Yeah. They don't shoe horses here anymore. Now it's just demonstrations. They make candle holders and things you can buy.
Okay.
But they make them while you're sitting there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They hammer them out. It's warm in there, too. One of my friends was a blacksmith there. Now he does the blacksmithing over at one of the other museums over on the mainland. Mm-hmm. Forearms like Popeye.
I bet.
They are huge forearms. He shakes your hand. He could take your arm with it.
You have to have arms like that if
yeah.
That's what you're doing.
I mean, he's got a 20-pound hammer.
Yeah.
And he's doing that
all day.
8 hours a day. Yeah. Seven days a week. I mean, yeah, he hammers a lot. There's an interesting story here. This is actually a term a lot of people know, but don't really know where it came from. A man's home is his castle. You heard the term? That's where it came from, right here. It's called Pond's Defense. A man caught, was in his home and a man broke in and was going to assault them and he didn't know he was going to kill him, didn't know what was going to happen. So he killed the man who broke into his house. What he didn't know is the judge in the area, it was his son. So they were going to arrest him. He knew they were coming for him. He got in a boat and tried to run because he knew it wasn't going to be good. He killed the judge's son, who he has, the man who's going to sentence him. I mean, he was scared. He didn't tell you death penalty. What's going to happen to me? So he ran, but they caught him, brought him back, put him before the judge. Of course, life in prison, throw away the key. You killed my son. Went up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said this man was intruding in his home. He was possibly going to kill him. He was defending himself. A man has a right to defend his house. Hence, a man's home is his castle. You have the right to protect your home. And this is where it all started, was in this courthouse right here.
Oh.
So, and there's a plaque on there that talks about Pond's Defense right there, too.
And is this still the active courthouse and police station in town?
They really don't have many court. The court is more in St. Ignace now. Okay. This is the active police station. Yes, there are vehicles on the island. There's an ambulance behind that garage door. And on the other side, there's a fire truck. Okay. There's also a couple of pickup trucks and support vehicles. Fires on this island are a big deal because some of these buildings, I mean, yeah. 1780.
Yeah.
You lose it, it's gone. So they do have firefighters, and they're really big on if there's someone even smells smoke, the police are looking for it. The firefighters on the island. And there's a lot of volunteer firefighters mm-hmm. working in everywhere you're going. They paint houses, they work in shops, restaurants, everywhere. They're everywhere. They're just constantly around.
With this being an old courthouse, or, you know, still, you know, somewhat, you know, active in that area, you know, obviously a lot of emotion going through a building like this. Is there any stories with this building?
Actually, I've never heard a ghost story in the courthouse.
Wow.
Never heard
That's
anything.
So
doesn't mean they don't exist, but sure. No one's talking about them if
okay.
they are. And that building over there is one of the old Astor Fir buildings. That's where the Cubby the Bear room is.
Okay.
So
whatever did happen with Cubby the Bear?
We don't know whatever happened to him.
Okay.
I don't know exactly. I'm sure he passed away of fine old age
sure.
and happy with a belly full of honey. I don't know what happened to him, though. But, yeah, it's interesting because you go to these museums. They have all the original artifacts from back in the 1800s in there, and you can just see what it looked like. Funny thing about Astor is John Jacob Astor, who was one of America's first millionaires, if not America's first millionaire, made a chunk, huge chunk of his money right here on Mackinac Island, and he never even visited.
Wow.
He made millions of dollars on this island in the fur trade. When this island was high in the fur trade, you used fur pelts instead of money.
Okay.
You would use it as money. So a fox pelt was worth so much, a beaver was worth so much, a raccoon was worth this, bear was worth a probably a fortune. And people would make a living trading pelts. You could buy your groceries with it. You could buy supplies to go out in the field. You could do whatever you needed to. And
sure.
Just did it with beaver pelts or whatever you needed. That's how you made it go. And he had, I believe it was the Northwest American Fur Company, I think was what his was. There were other fur traders on the island. When we get to Madeline's house, I'll tell you about her fur trading.
Okay.
And how that happened. This is going to be the newest bed and breakfast on the island. It's the Mackinac House, and it's going to open soon, we hope.
So this is a building that, from the exterior, looks like it's being either built or renovated. Nope. What is
it
this?
It is built from the ground up.
Okay, so this is brand new.
Brand new, yep. It was not a significant home that used to be there.
Okay.
It was just a maybe 1950s, 60s small home. Okay. It wasn't a big deal. Like the one next door, that's probably 1880s.
Okay.
Next door. The one on the other side is the old medical center. It's not a significant historical building. So, however, that one is the white one. That's known as the Geary House. The state park runs it, and some of the people who higher ups live there with their family.
Okay.
It has one ghost story, but it's not a bad one. Matthew Geary was on the island. He was a fisherman, lighthouse keeper. He had a lot of positions up here. Excuse me. And one day he passed away. Natural causes. And when his... he had a woman who helped take care of the house, you know, cook the meals and everything for them and the family. He was going to be buried. Cemetery. And she forgot her gloves. Because at the time everyone wore the gloves and everything like that. She runs back to the house to get her gloves. And he's walking down the staircase. He's being buried that day, but he was walking down the staircase, so he was late to his own funeral. It's kind of the punchline joke on that one. The people who do live there, I'm not sure if he still lives there, but they have said that they do hear noises every now and then. It sounds like someone's walking around in the house when the house is completely quiet and no one's walking around in the house. A door will swing every now and then. So they think there's someone present, but they're not very active. It's just kind of a little thing here and there. And on the island, it's not that unusual to hear footsteps or strange noises. It happens all the time in most of the old houses. And I mean, if you go to Europe, if your house isn't haunted, something's wrong with your house. So. Apologize for the temperature.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be this cold right now. It's supposed to
be like
about
fall.
Mid-60s, 70 by now. My wife is downstate, and she's just like, it was 80 yesterday. I'm like, oh, it was 60 yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was cloudy, and it rained in the morning. So this is Marquette Park. This is where the farm was, and this is where they found thousands of human remains. They're all gone, so you don't have to worry. You're not walking on anything. But this is where they found them. You can see why you would put a farm here.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty open, and there's your fort. You just had to climb up to the fort. That's all you had to do.
So obviously this was a farm, but before it was a farm, or was it after it was a farm, this was also probably the site of some battles, correct?
There were some battles on the island, but to be honest, there weren't a whole lot.
Okay.
Some of the battles from the fort, it is a British fort. That is a British fort from a Revolutionary War. It was not built by the United States. It was built by Patrick Sinclair about 1779 or 78 is when they did the construction. So it was during the Revolutionary War. It was constructed, but it wasn't finished because the Americans got it before it was finished. We won the war and we got the territory. This was ours. The Americans finished it. And then again in 1912, we had another war, the War of 1812, not 1912. Yeah, wrong year, 100 years off. 1812, It was an American fort. None of the soldiers knew we were at war. The town didn't know we were at war. The British knew we were at war. And the British came in at British Landing. If you've heard of British Landing on Mackinac, that's where they came on the island. They went through the woods. They had mercenaries from Native American tribes. They had their British soldiers. They had cannons. They had their guns. They had everything. They hauled everything. And I know how hard it is to get around this island today. I can imagine it was forest. All of it was forest, mm-hmm. No trails. And they brought it all to Fort Holmes, which is the highest point of the island. It's also directly behind the fort with a perfect sight view of the fort below. And they fired one shot from the cannon. The British said, if you don't surrender, we will attack. There were 60 men in the fort at the time. They didn't know they were at war, so they weren't ready for it. Mm-hmm. The town was vulnerable. They were vulnerable. So they put up the white flag and said, it's yours. And the British took the fort. They held it until 1814, signed a treaty again. And we got it back, and we've had it ever since. The fort has some activity. It's had some strange things happen. It's had some wild, like, tribunals. There's one private. His name is Private Brown. His name was James Brown, which it's true, but that was his name. He's not the singer. And he was a private, and he was on duty and got into an oral argument on the wall with a corporal, Hugh Flynn. The last words that were heard in the argument was, one of us is going to make it out of this alive, and only God knows who. And that was the end of the argument. Supposedly it got settled. Mess hall, later that night, Corporal Flynn's in the mess hall, and Brown comes in, just getting off duty, still has his rifle in his hand. Walks up to get some food. Bam! The gun goes off, hits Corporal Flynn in the neck, and killed him pretty much instantly. He said he's innocent because it was an old musket. They were the flash pin powder where it went off if you were to get a static electricity. You ever touch something metal in the winter and you go, ow? If you did touch that gun anywhere that was metal near that flash pan, the gun would go off. They were notorious for going off, misfiring. And he claimed that's what happened. People believed him. Soldiers believed him. Townspeople believed him. A lot of people believed him. The town, Reverend Ferry's wife, had a petition to get him freed. He was innocent. They attempted a mutiny up at the fort. Some of the soldiers got together and tried to get him freed by mutinying. That got squashed really fast. And eventually he was going to the president of the United States, Andrew Jackson, to get a pardon. Didn't come through. You are sentenced to be hung by the neck until dead. And by the way, I found out the whole terminology behind that because someone was hung once and they didn't die. And they freed him. They served you to be hung.
You made it.
You survived. You were hung. They let him go. It's a true story. I didn't know that was a true story. So that's why until dead was added to that.
It's like the first disclaimer.
Yeah. It was the first disclaimer. But they executed him. And a lot of people were really upset about it. And we believe he was executed somewhere near the rifle range. One, because of the activity on the rifle range. And two, when you get executed and you're being court-martialed, tend to do it on military grounds. They aren't going to do it in town square because you're not a private citizen. We actually have had numerous people say they've seen a soldier in uniform on the sides of the trail while they're walking down, watching them from the woods. People have said they felt someone step on the back of their heel when they're walking down the trail. They had hair pulled, backpacks pulled on, and they turn around and they see just the slightest glimpse of a man, but he said he's got a uniform. He had a uniform on. That's all they can say. And actually, there was a cop that was walking on the trail, heard gunshots while he was on the trail, heard bullets whizzing. He hit the ground. He actually was on one of our tours and told us about it. And he called the police on his cell phone and said, there's shots, I'm a cop, there's shots being fired in the rifle range, I need someone to get up here right away, quick. And they found out there was nobody shooting guns, there was nothing, and no one even heard the gunshots except him, and he was walking alone on the trail.
Wow.
So that has something to do with a rifle range. We also think that Private Brown haunts it and watches people mm-hmm. from afar, maybe pleading that he was innocent to this day, even though he's long gone. He's been gone for almost 200 years. So we think that was him.
With all of the ghost stories that are on this island, and basically almost every building having one with it, the folks who live here year round, mm-hmm. is it talked about anymore? I mean, or it's is it just kind of just a fact of life?
It's kind of something that a lot of the locals don't talk much about it, but the ones that do say just don't mention who you heard this from.
Okay.
They're an old fashioned. They're sure. good people, but they're a little bit old fashioned when it comes to the whole ghost story okay. thing and all that. I was the rebel. I was the one who started talking about it, and sure. they came to me and they were just like, "Just don't tell them who you heard this from."
Okay.
And I've been good about that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the summer workers and the tourists are my primary source of
sure.
things that happen. I've had a few things happen to myself, too.
Sure.
That's actually what got me into ghost hunting was this island. Mm-hmm. I saw a ghost when I was 12 years old. I was your age. I saw a ghost on the island. And, man, I'll tell you, it stayed with me to this day. I'll never forget what I saw. I've seen that same ghost one more time. That's how rare it is. And I'm in my 40s now. I've seen him twice.
What was it?
They nicknamed him Harvey. That's the name of the ghost. We know all about him. If you guys are willing to walk to Mission Point, I know it's a hike, but I can show you everything, where it happened and everything.
Let's walk down there.
If you want to. All
Let's
right.
walk down there, yeah.
Okay.
Are there any ghost stories of some of the ships or anything like that that people see off in the distance? I was just amazed by looking at some of the pictures of the old passenger steamers that would come in here years ago.
And you still get actual full cruise ships, like huge cruise ships really? Coming to the island. There was one here last week, and they let them dock right there. Usually they have them out there as they're, they have to get the ferries in out, but they were able to get this one to dock. There was a bad storm coming, and I guess the ship decided we're going to make it to Mackinac before the storm hits, we're going to spend the night. They never spend the night.
Okay.
They brought the ship in, had it docked there. It stayed till 6 o'clock the next day, and everybody was just like in awe of this huge. But it's from Bahamas, cruise liner, just parked right there.
How did it get? I didn't know they were on the Great Lakes at all.
Oh yeah, we have. I think there's two or three, and they're actually trying to get a lot more cruise ships on the Great Lakes. I mean, there's so much to see on the Great Lakes.
Yeah,
they're expensive, but you've got Chicago.
Yeah.
You got Mackinac, you got Sault Ste. Marie, you take a cruise ship through the Sioux locks.
Yeah.
There's Copper Country, Copper Harbor.
Yeah.
There's the shipwreck areas. There's where the Edmund Fitzgerald went down. You can go into Porcupine Mountains. They could take them by there where you have Lake of the Clouds, which, if you guys ever been to the UP? Like way up into Lake of Clouds and all that?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You never know that was Michigan.
No. I didn't know that the stuff even was out on the lakes. I was thought, like, well, a long time ago they used to do passenger lines, but why don't they do it anymore?
Well, that's awesome.
Then you got all the other things. You got Toronto, Chicago, Cleveland, Toledo, Detroit. You've got Green Bay, Wisconsin. You've got all the west side of the state of Michigan, all the great beaches that are there, Traverse City. I mean, there's so many places they could stop, and there's things to do in all those places, so...
Just all the cities need to build docks then.
Yeah, they're building docks. Detroit has a port now. I know that.
That's cool.
But the shipwrecks in these straits, it's actually a preserve now, underwater preserve. Mm-hmm. There are a large number of ships. I don't know how many. Everything good?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a large number of ships out there that have sunk. A lot of storms. There's reefs out there that have taken ships out. The largest ship out there is the Cedarville, which went down in the 1960s, 600-foot freighter. Went down in 7 minutes. Collided with a Norwegian freighter and ripped a hole in the side of it. Most of the crew made it off and survived, but at least seven of them didn't make it out. They went down with the ship, and we've lost 3 scuba divers on the ship, too, from the bends or getting in trouble down underwater. It's amazingly large. I've seen the photos of it. It's like 30 feet at one end depth and 70 feet at the other. It's laying on its side. And if you take a ferry from Mackinac City, you get pretty close to it. You actually see the buoy.
Really?
There's a dive buoy out there, and that marks the shallow spot where it's at. The smallest ship is probably as small as a canoe or a rowboat. And everything in between. There are some ships out there that are like they look like pirate ships. Big masted ships. They're sitting right out there. One's near the bridge. It's called the Sandusky. No one died on it, but the ship's still down there. It has its figurehead on the front. It has the wheel. It has everything. It looks like a pirate ship, except it's green covered in algae. But it's amazing. You can find photos of it online. It's amazing.
Does the cold help to preserve these things?
Fresh water, cold, fresh water keeps them. Yeah. I mean, that ship went down, not 100% sure, but I believe it would have been very early 1800s, if not earlier. It could have been late 1700s. So it's a really old ship. It would have been a ship that pirates era, 1700s.
So what have people seen out here in present time as far as, like, ghost ships? Ghost or ships, what are the stories?
There are stories that the Griffin comes through here, which is the most famous ship on the Great Lakes because it was the first ship that had sails on the Great Lakes. LaSalle, who is a famous explorer, everybody knows his name. Everything's named after him. LaSalle Bank, LaSalle, there's colleges. He left... I forget which city it was that he actually had the ship built and left, but I believe it was somewhere near Erie, Pennsylvania, but I'm not 100% sure where that was. They took the ship. It wasn't paid for, and he was going to explore the Great Lakes. They named Lake St. Clair. They were the ones who named Lake St. Clair near Detroit because they came to that lake on the Festival of St. Clair. That was the day of St. Clair. So they named it Lac de St. Clair. And they almost died in Lake Huron from a bad storm. And they weathered the ship. Everybody thought they were going to die. They had everybody praying on the ship because they really thought they were going to go down. They survived, came through the Straits of Mackinac, and made it over to, I believe it's near Green Bay, Wisconsin now. And then they went fur trading. They went and got furs. They loaded up the Griffin with more furs than it probably should have had. They didn't have enough room for a full crew. LaSalle and a bunch of his men decided to go explore the Mississippi River. And he sent three or four guys on the ship to bring it back to where they left in, I think it was Pennsylvania, to pay for it. The furs were supposed to pay for the ship. And then they were going to come back. The ship never made it to its port. No one knows where it is to this day. There's lots of theories. It's one of those ships that just vanished. The one thing that we know kind of where it was is because furs washed up on the shore of Mackinac Island, St. All this area, fur was washing up on the beaches. So they knew something happened. There's a few theories. One is that Native Americans attacked them, killed the crew, and sunk the ship. The other one is the crew got into hit a storm, and the storm foundered the ship, and they died. The other is the crew stole a lot of the furs off the ship, sunk the ship, and took off with the money, basically. No one knows what happened. There's a lot of theories where it would be. Some people say it's on the other side of the Straits of Mackinac, where I think it is, somewhere out maybe 20 miles or less, the other side of the bridge. Other people say it made it through here, and it made it to Huron, but I'm with the currents. How would the furs go backwards to the currents to get on these areas? So I think it's somewhere over there, but no one's ever seen it. There is a story of, on foggy mornings, people seeing a tall ship coming through the fog. You see its mast. Every now and then you see a glimpse of the ship, and it kind of just disappears in the fog. There's not that many tall ships in the Great Lakes, and they're pretty rare. So if you see one, it's rare that they ever come up here. I mean, some people say it's the ghost of the Griffin. It looks like the Griffin. Okay. The description is basically the Griffin. Another one's the Giltshire, a ship that was claimed to be unsinkable. First steel-hauled ship in the Great Lakes. What do you think happens to an unsinkable ship? We've heard of the Titanic, yes?
Yes.
It was the first steel-hauled freight ship in the Great Lakes, and it went down. It sank in a storm.
Surprise.
Didn't make it. What do you know? Maiden voyage. Didn't make it. You know? And some people say they see a freighter coming towards them, ferries, other freighters, but the freighter never moves, even though it's moving. And the closer they get to it, the further it seems to get until it just vanishes off. But it's facing them as it's coming. So it's like going backwards, but it's not. And then all of a sudden it's just gone. The one that I like is another one of those puzzle stories where two pieces fit together and I'm like, this works. There was a guy, his name was supposedly Sebastian, and he was a fur trader, and he had a canoe, not the type of canoe you guys are thinking. It's not a little canoe. We're talking a canoe that you could actually put sails on. They were huge canoes that they used up here to get around and move merchandise and people. Some of these canoes could fit 30 people. He filled it with furs. He was going to go to take the furs, so he had enough money to marry his fiancée, buy a homestead, and they were going to settle down. And when he was coming through the strait, something happened, and he perished. No one knows exactly what happened. He was heading to New France. That's one of the things you have to remember, New France, because New France was actually Detroit. And Detroit means the straits. Detroit means it's French for the straits. So he was supposedly headed to New France. That's where she was. And he vanished. Now, some people say they see a large canoe coming through the strait sometimes, and it vanishes. Now, in Detroit, there's a ghost story of a woman waiting for her fiancé to bring fur to help them get married. And she waits by the shoreline near the Detroit River, and she just watches the lakes waiting for him to come, her ghost. But he never comes. Might be the same story because they both kind of mesh because he's bringing the fur, she's waiting for the fur, she's waiting for him. There you go. New Detroit.
Yeah.
Or New France. That's Detroit. That's where she's at. So I'm just like, those two stories, I think that has something to do with it. So I love it when a ghost story has another ghost story and they work together because it just makes them so much more interesting to me.
It's like they're both haunting,
hauntings that no one knows are actually two hauntings in two places.
That wraps up the first part of our ghost tour around Mackinac Island with author Todd Clements. In part two of our live ghost tour, we're going to be talking about who's haunting the historic Island House Hotel, the oldest hotel on Mackinac Island. What happened when a woman's tomb was moved inside of St. Anne's Church? And what will make her happy? Also, what happens when you remove a moccasin from the grave of a Native American body and forget to return it to the grave? It actually happened. We'll have the story. Also, who are the children who haunt the Mission House Hotel? And what do they want today? And what kind of ghosts linger around the property of the Mission Point Resort on Mackinac Island? We'll be there live talking with Todd about the ghosts that still haunt that property. That's in part two of our interview. To hear it, become a supporter of our show. We call them Gravekeepers. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. It's $5 a month. You'll have access to the rest of this episode, as well as the part two of every single episode we've ever created. It's all there for you when you support our show for only $5 a month at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Your support is what keeps this show on the air. Thank you for that. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Yes. Get a premium finish with less odor and fumes for your painting project with Rust-Oleum's low odor spray paint. It provides a long-lasting, durable finish, making it perfect for indoor or outdoor projects. Save big on Rust-Oleum spray paints now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.